Hey guys, I just wanted to hop on really quick before this episode started and give a quick trigger warning. In this episode, we talk about perfectionism, mental health struggles, self-worth struggles, negative self-talk, eating disorders, and we talk a little bit about fat phobia. I also wanted to give a quick update if you haven't noticed already. We are now just Mindful Minds. Serafina Blog is no more, which is very sad, but also exciting. I started Serafina Blog 7 years ago, and it was definitely very important to me and still is, but I wanted to shift my focus more towards the podcast instead of the blog. So what that means is serafinablog.com is no more, but everything from serafinablog.com is now hosted on mindfulmindspod.com. So you can find all of our old blog posts dating all the way back to 2018. You can find frequently asked questions, press, contact information, how to sponsor the podcast. And then additionally, we added a new podcast services page. So I've been offering podcast contract services for 3 years now. And now on the website, you can learn all about our pricing and our service guide. And then you can also figure out how to book us and get a 30-minute free consultation for podcast services. So that's all now hosted on mindfulmindspod.com. We also changed our email. So if you're trying to get a hold of us, you can contact us at mindfulmindspod@gmail.com. So I hope that helps. If there's any confusion, I kind of did that a little under the radar and made some changes. And then I hope you guys enjoy this episode. It's very helpful for me as a perfectionist, and I hope it's helpful for you guys too. All right, here we go. Hi all, and welcome back to Mindful Minds. Thank you so much for joining us today. Today we're going to be talking about perfectionism, which personally is a topic that I've wanted to cover for a while because I am a self-diagnosed perfectionist and have been for my entire life. So I thought it would be a nice topic to cover and kind of go over what it is and how do we give ourselves grace to not be perfect. And so today we have Dr. Meni Jay on to talk a little bit with us about how to learn to let go of perfectionism. How are you doing today?
I am doing wonderful. And thank you so much for having me here. I'm excited to talk about all things perfectionism.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much for coming on. I will say your profile really intrigued me because you don't see a lot of accounts like dedicated to perfectionism. Like that's kind of a niche topic. And like I said, like that has been my entire life is just perfectionism. And I know a lot of people who also struggle with it, and obviously it can really bleed into like every aspect of your life. And a lot of my audience, kind of even just for context, is a lot of people who grew up in really conservative religious environments that kind of required perfection of them. And so sometimes even if maybe you weren't someone who just kind of naturally is more perfectionistic, I know a lot of people that kind of got pushed towards that perfectionistic mindset because of what was expected of them in their really intense, like rule-driven environments, whether that was like the school they went to or the church they went to or whatever. So I know a lot of my audience like relates to this as well. So with that all being said, before we get, you know, started and dive into all of the nitty-gritty, do you want to give a little background into who you are and why this topic, why this field?
Definitely, definitely. So I am Dr. Meni Jay. I am a licensed psychologist here in Los Angeles, California. And I do individual or couples therapy in my practice. And I actually work with a variety of mental health issues such as OCD, generalized anxiety, addiction, relationship issues, codependency. So there's a lot of different things that I work with my clients. But the story about perfectionism did start, as you kind of shared about yourself, for me it was a personal journey as well, where a decade ago, I read Brené Brown's book called Gifts of Imperfection. So it was my rude awakening that this anxiety and this guilt that I was feeling behind it was running this need to be perfect. So that started obviously my personal journey of unpacking it, understanding it. I moved to the United States 2 weeks before I turned 15. So that gave my therapist and I a lot to work on understanding, you know, and I'm sure many people will resonate with this who are immigrants. You become your parents' translator outside in the public, but then you come to your home and you're back into this child mode and you're supposed to just, you know, obviously follow the rules and so forth. So it's all these all these life experiences that I had to unpack to understand how I become to be such a perfectionist. And about that time, so I said this was a decade ago, and at that time I was also working in my graduate school. And after I graduated and started working with people as a therapist, what I also start to see how many people also struggle with perfectionism behind their mental health struggle. Meaning a lot of people come to therapy understandably for anxiety, right? Insomnia, depressed mood, relationship issues, loss, eating disorder. And what would happen as we would do therapy is that, again, as we start to understand these issues they're struggling with, there will always be some level of perfectionism part of their story or part of their problem. I want to be very clear here. Perfectionism is not a diagnosable mental health disorder. However, it is linked to, it can exacerbate already existing mental health issues, or it can lead to development of mental health issues. Therefore, as a psychologist, it made such a sense for me over the years, as you said, have these maybe online relationships with people speaking on only on perfectionism, as I related to it personally and saw it professionally be an issue.
Yeah, no, and that makes so much sense, because it's really the root, like it seems like it's the root issue in a lot of different like areas of mental illness. Like even if you're looking at an eating disorder, a lot of the times the goal is you feel like your body isn't perfect. And so whatever you have to do to get your body to be perfect can then develop an eating disorder out of those habits. Or, you know, having anxiety or relationship anxiety because you don't feel like you're a perfect enough partner. Like there's so many different things that it ties to. And I will say that like far before I got diagnosed with anything, far, far, far before, I had like self-proclaimed myself as a perfectionist, starting at like age like 7 or 8, and kind of wore it as a badge of honor. Because I think that when you're dealing with perfectionism, the label perfectionist doesn't always seem like an issue. It can kind of feel like, oh yeah, well, like I work really hard to be perfect, like gold star for me. And so I would brag about it all the time and be like, oh yeah, I'm a perfectionist. And it wasn't until I hit like probably 16 or 17 that I was like, okay, well, I hate my body because I feel like my body isn't perfect. And I hate my brain because I feel like my brain isn't perfect and it's not doing what I want to do. And I don't like the way I exist in religion because I feel like I'm never good enough for God and I can't be perfect enough. And I have to be perfect because that's what I need to do. And I started seeing it all manifest in all these different ways. But the primary way for me that it manifested, and the way that everyone in my life knew that it manifested, was in school. And I didn't see that as a problem until I was, I think, probably like 15, and I was in an AP class, and I was really stressed out about it because it was the first class in a long time that had like really challenged me and that I actually felt like I needed to work hard in to succeed. Like it wasn't coming naturally to me. And I was a straight A student, 6th grade through 12th grade, like all A's, never got anything different. And it wasn't that it came supernatural. Like I had to work really, really hard to get there, but there was no room for me to falter. And it wasn't something that was put on me by my parents, because that was something that therapists for years have always asked me, like, okay, well, were your parents, like, did they expect perfection of you? And I'm like, no, like my parents were like, hey, I think you should get a B. Like, I think that would help you. And I was like, no. And so when I was 15, I took an AP class, and this one test, like it was a final, and I needed to get like a high A on it to not have my A slip backwards into an A minus. And so I was killing myself over it. And I remember like I was downstairs studying, and it was like the night before, like, you know, 11 p.m. And I'm this little tiny 15-year-old person who simultaneously was dealing with like a lot of depression and a lot of other mental health issues. And my mom came down, and I was hysterically crying. And I believe I have autism and I have sensory issues. And so all these things were adding up as a child, where I was so overstimulated. And I was downstairs crying about this test because I just my brain, I had basically overstudied. I'd been studying for too long. My brain had turned off. Like I wasn't succeeding. I wasn't learning anything new. My brain was offline. And my mom was like, okay, well, how about you go take a shower and then I'll stay up with you and I'll help you study. And so I studied until like 3 a.m. and she stayed up with me and quizzed me and helped me because she like knew how important it was to me. And I took the test the next day and literally my teacher knew how important this was to me. And I was in a really small school. And when he graded it, he came in and left his class, found which class I was in and burst through the door and was like, 97, you got a 97 to come tell me what I got. And it was like such a like, yes, but it was also a little bit of like a, I remember like looking back on it a few weeks after and being like, oof, like that perhaps was a little too important to me. Like, I think that was a little bit too important. And I kind of brushed it off. And then I went to college and I made it a point. My whole goal, my whole high school career was get valedictorian and I got it. And then in college, I was like, I need to fail at something because I need to know if it's going to ruin me. Like, I have to see what happens if I fail. And so I intentionally was trying to get average grades, like getting like C's and B's. And like the first time I got the first B, I like was hysterical. And that was kind of when it hit me of like a, I don't think this is healthy for me to be so wrapped up in this. And then I started, you know, going to therapy and dealing with all the other mental health issues. And perfectionism was this one string that was just through every single thing that I dealt with. It was in the OCD. It was in the eating disorder. It was in the depression. It was in the anxiety. Everything that was in it was, I'm somehow not perfect enough for XYZ, for the world, for family, for a partner, for friends, whatever. I'm not perfect enough for something. And it's one of those things where that is a core issue that I haven't quite grasped how to deal with. I know that it definitely like learning how to give myself grace, but that's, you can say that and it's way harder to do. So for everyone who, if there's people listening who either don't know what perfectionism is, which it is a pretty like colloquial term, but if people don't know what it is, or if people are kind of listening to this and being like, ooh, that sounds a little bit like me. Do you want to give a little bit of a crash course in what perfectionism is and kind of where it can stem from?
Definitely. I first want to thank you so much for sharing your story because it's such a vulnerable and almost at times quite painful examples of how perfectionism look like. So I do think that your life experience already helps us understand so well what perfectionism is. And I guess to start with, one of the first traits of perfectionism is having high expectations of yourself. And we have to really understand what that means, because a lot of times it gets misunderstood or it's falsely equated same as having standards. It's not same thing as having standards. It is having high expectations of yourself that are unachievable, unrealistic. And the other day, actually, I had someone, and I enjoy these kinds of conversations. I had someone on social media kind of argue back with me that in history, so many wonderful things have been achieved for the first time because it felt like, you know, it was unachievable. And so perfectionism, again, is not about like being inspired or letting go of perfectionism. Does not mean you're not going to have inspiration. You're not going to have motivation. And the second piece you just mentioned about not being perfect enough, I think is the second piece of perfectionism. It's not just about having an unrealistically high expectations of yourself. It's also attaching your worthiness, your self-view, and your belief around whether you deserve to be loved attached to this. And that's also another key piece of it is, like, if we say, okay, here's anxiety, hearing disorder, eating disorder, depression, meaning different ADHD, trauma, all sorts of different mental health issues. And we say that, okay, underneath it, there is a level of perfectionism that feeds it. We want to understand that. Well, if we go any deeper, if we want to understand, okay, why would anybody be so caught up pursuing perfectionism if it's so debilitating and causing self-hatred? Is because underneath it, at the core of it, there is this, again, need for feeling enough, feeling love, like feeling a sense of belonging and feeling a sense of, like, again, to me, what really resonates a lot with people I work with and as a human being is we want to know that we deserve to belong. We want to know we deserve to be loved. We want to know we deserve to be successful. It's not just that, oh, you matter, you belong. It's like, do I really deserve that? Am I worthy of it, I suppose? So again, perfectionism is a combination of, yes, we have these incredibly unrealistic expectations, and it also is linked to this belief that if I don't do things perfectly, like I said, if I'm not a perfect sister, perfect daughter, perfect friend, perfect partner, then again, my sense of belonging and the love and safety I am wired to have will be compromised, even worse, will be removed from me. It won't be accessible to me. So there's a lot of this around perfectionism. And in terms of like the development of perfectionism, definitely I always encourage people to start from the beginning of their lives. It doesn't mean like that cliche, like, oh, here we go. I get some of my clients telling me this. Oh, here we go. We're going to blame my parents, right? We're going to talk about my mom.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm like, well, let's just start from the beginning. Your life starts and let's just, you know, look at your life experiences and look at timeline. If nothing happened in your, you know, in your early 5 to 7 years of life with your parents, then we'll move on to the next kind of group of people that you're most, you know, surrounded by, which would be either grandparents or mainly school, as you described your experience. And then there's religion, because we may be spending a lot of, again, religious activities based on our family's belief system. So it's really just kind of starting from the beginning and looking at all of these, I would say, people and places that we want to see how they shaped and influenced the person. Because as you explained, perfectionism is sadly rewarded by our society, by our academic institutions, and at times parents unintentionally. I really want to highlight that because I hope it's okay for me to, like, again, use some of your life experience. Like, if now, maybe because I know more about my perfectionism, when my daughter goes to middle school, she's now soon to be 6. So she goes to middle school or high school, and I see her studying at 11 a.m. crying, I would say, we're going to bed.
Yeah, all done.
We're going to bed, right? Like, so unfortunately, sometimes we don't understand perfectionism, and that, again, I'm sure a well-intended teacher who ran to you to say you got 97, I wonder, would it be a little better if they were to say, before I give you your score, are we aware that whatever the score is, you did your best? This score doesn't say anything about you. You see, like, there's a difference of earning some of these goals. There's a difference of working towards some of these goals that I wanted to explain to people about how things can be unintentionally and unknowingly could be rewarded as well from people that we look up to or people we trust.
Well, and I remember too, to speak to the point of the unintentional, like the unintentionality, I guess, of some of the harm. I remember having a math teacher in 8th grade, and I was going through, you know, middle school, was having a hard time, and it was just like not really fitting in. And I think she could tell I'm someone who like wears my emotions on my face. And so she could tell when I came into class, and she was my very first period. And so first thing in the morning, she could kind of tell if I was upset. And she was always so comforting and didn't have favorites. There was no one student is like a favorite student because they're the smartest. And I went to a very small school. And so sometimes if you were the kid who was, you know, seeking the perfection in grades, you would get more attention or more approval from the teacher because it was something that was such a small environment. And it was also a religious environment. So then you've got the double whammy where I'm going through the intense perfectionism in school. And then I also have a Bible class. And so in school, I'm being taught that the Bible is expecting this of me and that I need to meet all these expectations. And that if I don't, the like risk factor is very high. And so this one teacher, I remember like she stuck in my mind more than any other teacher I think I've ever had in my academic career. And she was so incredibly, loving and kind. And it did not matter what type of student you were. Like, it didn't matter if you were kind of a class clown and a little bit like disruptive, she would chat with you and still be so gentle and kind. And like, before every single exam, every test that we had, and like math is can be really hard for some students. And before every single math test, she would bring in muffins and cheese and make sure we all had breakfast, which also was like so massive. I've had two teachers in my lifetime, once in college and one in high school, and she was the one in high school, that have prioritized making sure I was fed and making sure that before I did certain things in my academic career, I met my basic needs first. And that can be like life-changing to a child, because you don't realize how quick eating disorders can develop out of even just habit, because you're skipping meals so you can study, you're skipping meals so you can get to school on time or whatever. And the next thing you know, you've only eaten one thing all day. And so she would feed us, and then she would sit there and she would write encouraging things on the boards saying like, no matter what your score is, you can do it. And like, I believe in you. And like, I'm proud of you, and would write it all over the boards. And like, if you like, there were a few kids who would like maybe have like little meltdowns during tests and start crying or whatever. And like, we would do that in her class because it was such a safe environment to do so. And it was so rooted in like the roots and the nature of her class that it was such a safe environment for success, for failure, for trying and just doing your best. And that was good enough for her. And there was no, like, the expectations, not that they were low, because she expected, she had high standards for us. Like, she wanted us to do well, but there wasn't this, if you do poorly, I think less of you. Like, the, what she thought about our character and us as humans was separated from our performance. And it was so evident in her class. And this was an eighth grade class. Like, I was in eighth grade. I was like, you know, whatever, 14, 13. And so we're not talking like a college professor who's able to like communicate this to students. These are young kids who, we never sat down and had a conversation like this with her where she was like direct about all of this, but all of her actions and the way that she set up the environment communicated so clearly to us that no matter what you do, I don't think less of you as a person. And she would try to get to the root of issues of things. If someone was acting out, she'd sit down with us and say, hey, so like, what's going on? Like, can we just chat about it? And it was such a like phenomenal environment. And every friend that I have from high school, like all through high school too, we would all just be like, oh gosh, we loved her. Like, she was just so great. And so it's interesting how you can still cultivate, like good standards for people and not have like these really low standards where you don't expect anything of anybody, but you can have standards and still want people to do great and succeed and grow without having that partnership with perfectionism.
Absolutely. And I think this also kind of goes back to like, then what are other traits of perfectionism? And I think one of the other main traits of perfectionism is self-criticism.
Right.
So a person with perfectionism is very judgmental towards themselves. And if they have what we call other-oriented perfectionism, meaning they expect other people to be perfect, then they become judgmental of other people. So another main trait of perfectionism is very inappropriate, very excessive, and quite debilitating judgment, criticism. And part of that is like when we talk about having high expectations of yourself, perfectionist says you must repeat that perfect outcome. So if you do something perfectly, it says, well, can you do it faster next time? If again you did something perfectly, perfectionism says, can you do it better next time? So can you replicate it? Because if you were really good, you get that 97 again, or you get that 100 again. If you're really good, instead next time you'll get 98, 99. And can you take the test faster? Instead of, you know, I'm sure you heard of those moments in life where we're in a classroom and you see who's the first person turning the test to the teacher. Even in that moment, one of the things I also found out about like studying perfectionism, there is a very strong relationship between pace at the things we do and perfectionism. There's this false belief that the faster I do things, more perfect I am because it's better. And again, faster, shorter. And even if I can do it by myself, because a lot of times people with perfectionism feel asking for help. Like, let's say I'm working on my resume and I want to call a friend to have them take a look at it. Any kind of like getting another person's opinion, getting another person's like input and delegate, feel all flaws, signs of weaknesses, signs of imperfections. And the other thing that I really want to add to this conversation about, like, I guess maybe like why perfectionism is so bad, because what happens to things about you that are not perfect, whether that is your mood or weight or the way you run or the test results you get, what happens to those things? We end up hating on them. We end up disliking parts of ourselves that don't meet this definition of perfection. And here's where things get incredibly depressing, because you start to have a war within yourself. The parts of me that are great hates the part of me that are not. And the truth is, going back to, I think you were saying something about like perfectionism, is we are all imperfect human beings. That is the truth here. So we have to surrender and accept and celebrate that. Because I strongly believe there are generationally like passed down false ideas around words like, and this comes up, honestly, just came up in the last couple of weeks with some of my clients, where we're taught the words like average is bad. Words like ordinary is bad. And words like flaws and mistakes are bad. Those are passed down from previous generations. And hopefully the way that we are communicating today and the books that are being published and the wonderful podcasts that are being recorded, hopefully new ideas are being generated that says we are all imperfect human beings. This, you know, that's just part of our makeup. And that there's nothing, again, scary or threatening about being ordinary, being average, making mistakes, having failure.
All right. For those of you who have been here for a bit, you've heard me talk about my pup, Stevie Ray. When Stevie was a puppy, she had some undiagnosed food allergies that resulted in her being super itchy. Luckily, we found Scouts Honor. Scouts Honor's products are probiotic and are lifesavers for pups with sensitive skin, who are prone to itchiness, or if you just want your pup to have the softest fur ever. We exclusively use Scouts Honor and have for the past 2.5 years. We love their unscented shampoo and conditioner and their probiotic paw spray, which is amazing for Frito-Toe pups. On top of their amazing products, with every bottle bought, they provide a meal for an animal in need. If you have a pet, I would highly encourage looking into Scouts Honor. And listeners of the podcast can use the code MINDFULMINDS for 20% off of a purchase of $50 or more. Again, that's code MINDFULMINDS for top-notch doggy grooming. I have been asked from so many people, how did you start your podcast? The answer is simple, Buzzsprout. I had no production experience when I started the show, and I used Buzzsprout's blog and website to teach myself how to get started. Buzzsprout not only lists your show on all major streaming platforms, but you also get access to a website, audio players, and custom sound bites. If you are looking to launch your dream podcast or you're looking for a new platform, Buzzsprout is the way to go. You can follow the link in our show notes to receive a $20 credit towards your membership, and you will be supporting our show. Happy podcasting! Two things come to mind for me. So for one, like with the, I guess with perfectionism and the inner critic aspect, like the, in your inner war, I guess, I think the thing that also can happen is you don't trust other people's opinions and you don't trust other people's words when they tell you that you are good enough, because that inner critic is so loud and so convincing. It is constant for me with my partner, where like we just moved in together in the last like 2 weeks. And he just sees me more often now because we're just accumulatively spending more time together. And I have realized that all of a sudden my body image issues are flaring up like crazy. And I realize, I think it's sheerly because I just am like, oh no, he's seeing me more often and I'm not like put together. And so he must think I'm ugly. And I have such internal fat phobia because I've been dealing with an eating disorder for like 10 years. So it's a constant battle of me having to try to like shut down those thoughts. And I just was having all of these overwhelming body image thoughts and just constantly asking him, do you think I look bad? Do you think I look bad? And I normally don't do that. And it came up a lot in the last week. And I even said, I said, do you think I've been asking you that more often? Because I feel like I have. I feel like it's flaring up really bad. And he was like, yeah, no, it's been a lot more like apparent than normal. And the thing that's so frustrating is that he can tell me, no, I don't think you look bad. I think you look beautiful. And it sometimes feels like it's just speaking like one in ear or one in ear out the other, because my inner critic is like, no, he thinks you look bad. And that voice is so much louder. And simultaneously, like with the critiquing of things and always needing to do something better, I've noticed that like in my personal life, it applies to, I mean, everything, but I recently picked up rock climbing in the last like 7 months. I started rock climbing. And there are obviously some ways of rock climbing that are really competitive. There are competitions and stuff, but I just do it for fun. And I've realized that like in my head, if somebody gives me advice on a climb and helps me with something, or if I do something that I feel like wasn't the best way I could have done it, in my head, it's like worth less points. Even though there is no point system in rock climbing, like that's not how rock climbing works. But in my head, I've created this like point system of saying like, okay, well, I got help for this climb, so this climb isn't quite worth as much. And I need to do this one again to prove that I can do it completely on my own. And then that will be worth enough points. And it's this constant like scorekeeper in my head, making sure that everything I'm doing as independently as possible, as fast as possible, as like perfect as possible. And as without like any hiccups, like there can't be any hiccups. And if there is, it's like, okay, well, let's try that again and see if I can get it perfect this time. And it just applies to everything. And obviously there are some aspects of your life where that doesn't seem especially debilitating. Like in rock climbing, it's kind of like, okay, I'm challenging myself to be better and become a better climber. So I don't view it as too like debilitating of a thing. But when it comes to looking at something like my body, and it's constantly impacting the way that I view how I look in clothes or if I'm good enough for my partner. And then simultaneously the way that that projects onto society, because I have the perfectionism and society as a whole has created this intense, like fat phobic mindset in my head that now I'm having to completely undo that when I go out into society, because I have that so ingrained in me. So I'm having to like, no, like being fat is not bad. Being fat is not bad. Being fat is not bad. And try to drill it into my mind. And that can impact how I view other people and how I view their worth. And so I'm having to constantly check myself on that too. And it just goes so deep. And sometimes, you know, if you're writing an essay and you're being really perfectionistic about it, it might not seem like the end of the world. But once it starts to spread into all these other things, like it's kind of like a cancer where it just really bleeds into everything and it infects everything. And all of a sudden, nothing you do is good enough for yourself, or sometimes it's other people projecting their perfectionism onto you. And I've noticed that I now have for a long time project my perfectionism onto other people, where if I ask for help and someone does something, I hover. And I'm like, can you do it this way? And it's like, so now I'm making someone else feel like they're incapable of being independent and doing something well because I'm being so critical. And it just happened 30 minutes ago. My partner was giving my dog a bath because we took her out in the snow. And, I really wanted her to be clean. I have contamination OCD, so the cleanliness is a big thing for me. So I was really wanting her to be clean. And I asked him, can you give her a bath? And then I didn't even realize I was doing it. I walk into the bathroom with him and I'm just standing over his shoulder. And I was like, and he was like, I got it. Like, I know how to give her a bath. I can give her a bath. And I was like, no, I know, but can I just like feel the water? Cause I think that maybe it might be too hot for her. Can I just check it really quick? And he was like, I've got it. And I was like, okay. And he was like, okay, you can go. And I was like, okay. And I just kind of like stood there for a second. And he was like, go, you can go. And I was like, okay. And so I like walked downstairs and I just like literally stood in the middle of the living room, like just kind of looking around for a second. Cause I was like, I don't even know what to do. Cause I really feel like I need to go make sure that what he's doing is perfect. And that makes him feel like he's not capable, and he's a perfectly capable individual and he knows what he's doing. But because in my head, things have to be so specific in order to reach perfection, that's now impacting somebody else.
It does. Absolutely. It shows up. Perfectionism shows up in relationships a lot. And that's another myth that I think worth debunking, where people often falsely think, like we said already, perfectionism is same as me doing my best or having standards. And we hopefully help people understand that's false. Another piece of it is where people think perfectionism is all about tasks. Like it's a problem you have when you are working on a task, and they don't realize that perfectionism does also show up in relationships with other people. And actually in all relationships, it shows up in your family systems, the way you might be, you know, codependent or enabler. It shows up in your romantic relationship. Again, in codependency, it could show up in your work relationship. And as you described, it hurts. What it hurts in relationship is a sense of trust, because the other person feels like, well, so you don't trust me to get this right. You don't trust me that I will be able to handle this. Right. So perfectionism actually hurts the trust that we need in relationships to love each other, to feel safe. It hurts the respect. People feel less respected, and people feel like you trust them less because of the perfectionism. So again, helping people understand perfectionism is not just a task-oriented problem, it's a relationship-oriented problem. And again, instead of thinking that if I am perfect, I will have the perfect relationship, we have to really understand and unpack that by having perfectionism in my relationship, I'm hurting my relationship, because then there's a lack of trust. And here's the other thing, if we don't fail together, or if we don't see each other fail, we don't get close to each other. I often ask my clients to write about what they think benefits of failure is. Personally, in a group setting, in relationships, family setting, doesn't matter. Because it's really important for us to understand that often one of the most genuine empathy we can grow is through our failure. Because if I know how bad it sucks to be broken up with or to get a rejection, then when you are going through that experience, I can empathize with you only to the depth that I have failed at that thing, or only to the depth that I have sat with the pain of that failure. Right. So again, we have to really embrace and come to, again, a sense of curiosity that our imperfections in relationships boosts trust. It provides more connection. It allows for more growth. And I know it's very difficult to kind of understand that initially, because that is so opposite of what we've been taught. We've been taught your imperfections are signs of failure. Your imperfections are signs of weakness. And here I am shouting at people that, like, no, imperfections are actually a gift that brings us closer and gives us empathy. The other thing you said that I think is very also good to know about perfectionism is that it latches onto things you value. So whenever you're going through something, you're pursuing something, or you're starting something that you value, meaning it is a passion of yours, or it adds meaning to your life, it's going to latch onto it. Because if we have a false belief that says it has to be perfect for it to be valuable, for it to have, you know, meaning, it has to be perfect. And so, you know, when I became a mom for the first time 6 years ago, my perfectionism was right there. And I did struggle with it. I had postpartum anxiety, and it's not like, oh, it just showed up and then it left the scene. No, it shows up and then it sticks around and tries to, you know, whisper to your ear, well, did you do a good job breastfeeding? Did you do a good job, you know, with this diaper cream you picked? You know, is it the best one? So it can be really helpful to know that perfectionism will latch onto things you value. So anytime you're going through a change, it might be really, again, mindful to be aware of my perfectionism could show up. I have to obviously be prepared, and I need to kind of maybe armor up a little bit against my perfectionism.
Yeah, that was something that was a really, 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 really significant. So we just moved, right? And so we knew there was going to be changes. And with the contamination OCD, I was expecting there to be a lot of changes because we set up a different rule system for the house intentionally to try to give me some exposure therapy for my OCD. And so we actually went to couples therapy for 2 weeks leading up to the move to set some preparations. And part of the preparation was because I was stretching myself with the contamination OCD, which I haven't done in 2 years. I haven't done any type of exposure therapy in 2 years. And so this is like a massive, massive jump for me. I kind of prepped my partner and said, hey, I know myself and I know that when I feel out of control and I feel like the world is not something that I have in my back pocket, the perfectionism comes out, the control issues come out, and I start really needing to find things that I can feel like can be perfect and can be these like beautiful little things that I have full control over. And so I said, for the first 2 weeks, I might need some serious extra grace and I might need some serious extra wiggle room to kind of get used to this environment, get used to the contamination, because there's only so many ways that my brain can stretch and grow at one time. And one of the things that we did was we shrunk the world of my perfectionism. So prior, I lived in an apartment by myself and I could have full control over the entire apartment. And I got to decide what got to be perfect and how it could be perfect. And I got to manage everything. Now I'm sharing a three bedroom, three bathroom house with someone. And it's like three times the square foot, you know, that my apartment was, way more space. And we knew that it wasn't realistic or fair for me to have full control over that environment. And so what we did was we have three bedrooms. And so we have a master bedroom and we have my bedroom and we have my partner's bedroom. And so we're currently in my bedroom. This is where I'm recording. And I have full control over this room. I'm allowed to do whatever I'd like in this room. I can decorate it however I'd like. I can clean it however I'd like. If I need something to be completely perfect and exactly the way that I want it, I can come into this room and make it perfect. But we kind of shrunk the world of my perfectionism so that I wasn't able to be a perfectionist in the entirety of the home, but I can be a perfectionist in this room specifically. And ideally, at some point, I'd be able to let go of this room. But for right now, like it's a quote unquote baby step in the long, you know, long haul of how I'd like to heal and grow and process. But the thing that's been so interesting too is there are obviously benefits to imperfection, but there are also just benefits to letting go of control of things. Like I've noticed that, and my partner has brought this up a lot where he's like, I know that you think that everything that you do is going to be the exact perfect way to do it. Because in your mind, like you know how to make it perfect. And he said, but I have really good suggestions too. And I think that maybe some of my suggestions would work really well. And there are some things that like I think that I have to micromanage. And I think that, like you said, delegating is really hard and letting other people do things because it's like, well, no, they're not going to be perfect if they do them. And it's so interesting to me how that has been the lens that I've operated under my entire life. And now there's quite literally just too much to do. And so whether I want to or not, I'm having to delegate because I can't do all of it. And also I'm trying to, you know, stretch myself and give my partner room and make it a partnership and make it not just where I'm the dictatorship of the home or the dictator of the home. And he's just like doing all of my tasks. And so yesterday I was really nervous because I told him that I wanted to help with the Christmas lights and he was like, oh yeah, I can put them up. And I was like, oh gosh, like I'm going to have to like fix it because they need to be perfect. And I got home and they looked gorgeous. And I was like, Fina, like you need to trust him more because he's a very competent person and he's very smart and he's very capable. And it's one of the reasons why you're in love with him. And he obviously has it under control. Like this is a full grown adult man. He can do things on his own. And it was just kind of one of those things where the more I let go of the perfectionism and I trust that someone else can make something good and I'm not the only person who can make things worthy and good, the more he's proven to me over and over again that he can do things and that they can be great and they can be, and even if they're not exactly how I want them, on the large scale of things, it's not that big of a deal. Like when you really actually like face imperfection and it's like, oh, I would have done it this way. And then you realize, well, but the way that they did it actually works fine. It actually works a little bit better than the way I was going to do it. And you kind of realize, okay, well, maybe I didn't need to be in full control over this.
Absolutely. And I think one of the things is like when you see perfectionists having a hard time delegating or asking for help, I even also seen in relationship, they can have a very hard time giving an apology. And none of that, again, lack of ability to delegate, lack of ability to ask for help, lack of ability to apologize, has nothing to do with arrogance or self-centeredness. It actually stems from, again, this fear of, but what if it won't be perfect? So again, a perfectionist has a hard time delegating, not because they think they are just like know-it-all and they are, you know, above everybody. It's more like if I delegate, then I have to take the risk that the outcome won't be perfect. And that is very threatening to me. And that's the other thing we have to ask ourselves. Why do we want things to be so perfect? Why do we want this presentation or the holiday decorations or the travel plans we have to be perfect? And because we falsely think that, again, whatever that we're working on, if it's perfect, it says something about me. It means that my life is worthy. My life is going in the right direction. Or we might even say with the presentation at work, that means that my job is safe and secure. So I understand that we believe perfectionism protects us and or gives us a sense of safety and security. We also have to understand that, you know, things, it's a debilitating sense of security and safety. Yeah. And we also want to, like you gave these examples, like we want to create relationships in our lives, personally and professionally, that is welcoming of imperfections. We have to really be curious about things not working out exactly like we thought it would. Not just because other people are capable, like our coworkers or our partners are capable. It's also like, It gives so much more diversity to our lives. It gives so much more color when things are done differently and that everybody does it a little differently. And I also believe you have to ask yourself, like you were saying about like, does it really matter? Like we have to really ask ourselves what matters more. Is this idea that in that kind of relationship example, I'm sure what matters more and what ends up happening is people feeling included. Like for example, at work, you are delegating or you're asking for help. People want to be included and people want to feel like they're contributing. People want to feel like they have something to give to somebody else. And that's why sometimes, you know, there's interesting studies around altruism and things like that, because not selfishly, but I think this shows so much of like how we are wired for connection. We want to know that we can help people. We want to know that we can make a difference. And so speaking of, again, what matters and what do you value more, I'm sure we would say it matters more to me that my partner felt good about setting the Christmas tree than my perfectionism winning or my perfectionism being, you know, satisfied. And I think the other thing you said that I really want to maybe talk a little bit more about is this exposure that we want to do, because ultimately, behaviorally, I guess speaking, ultimately you have to do the opposite of what your perfectionism is telling you. So under like dialectical behavior therapy, DBT, there's this idea of opposite action plan. So you really, as the name sounds, you really want to come up with actions that are going to be opposite of what you've been doing, whatever the unhealthy pattern is. Obviously here it's perfectionism, doing things perfectly. And so I always encourage people like, look at the ways perfection is showing up in your life, because for some people it could be I have a really hard time giving apologies because I have a really hard time accepting I made mistakes. Again, it's not arrogance, it's just my self-esteem, so I don't give apologies. Another one could be I don't go to bed unless everything on my to-do list is done. Like you just earlier said, I will skip meals because I want to make sure I get done with my to-do list. So this person just named three things they do because of their need for perfectionism. So their opposite action plan will be those three things. I would say, okay, as a therapist, you know, I see people once a week. So before I see you next week, make sure you apologize to one person meaningfully for hopefully a meaningful reason. But if nothing happened, just say, I'm sorry for bumping into somebody, let's say. So you would do an opposite action where you would say, again, apologize to one person in 1 week. Make sure you do not complete your to-do list. And specifically with that, I actually encourage people also like time. I think it's very important for us to, especially with the pandemic, working from home, everything has been blurry, right? Like we have no sense of like, when is my work finished? Like, well, it's 7 o'clock and I'm just on my couch. Let me just grab my laptop and respond to a couple emails. Like I always encourage people, be mindful of time. It's 5 o'clock, it's 4 o'clock. You're going to pick up your kids, then you're done with your to-do list. It's 3 o'clock. Like I encourage people to be mindful of time, have those boundaries with their day. So they encourage themselves not to feel like the finish line is completing that to-do list. So again, you got to do a lot of opposite actions, which ultimately will feel like an exposure. That is part of it. Yes.
Yeah. And it's terrifying. Like it's really scary and it can be really overwhelming. And I know like from personal experience, my like number one piece of advice to anyone who wants to kind of start intentionally doing the opposite action. Like for me, the very first time I ever did that was purposely getting not straight A's in college. Like that was an intentional action for me where it was like, I need to see what happens if I do this because I've never done it. And I need to know if my world will end. I need to know if the world will come crashing down if I do this. My number one like piece of advice for people would just be to prepare that it's probably going to be like, depending on the severity and depending on how important the thing is that you're going to be doing the opposite action. Like there are some things where I feel more comfortable letting go of something like a bath of my dog, but I don't feel comfortable letting go of my cleaning procedures. Or I feel more comfortable letting my partner help me with certain things, but like letting go of my perfectionism with my body is a lot harder. So there are things that are like, there's kind of a hierarchy of what is more important and what is more intense. And so if it is something that's more intense that you know is going to be emotionally taxing, let the people around you know what's going on so that they're aware of the steps that you're taking and can support you and maybe have a little bit of extra grace if you start to kind of melt down or have some sort of like reaction to it. And prepare to then have other, like, I know for this whole move, there was a lot of changes and there's obviously been a lot of perfectionism that I've had to let go of strictly because there's just been so much to do. So I have been latching on to coziness. Like I've purposely been trying to like wear really comfortable clothes that make me feel really cozy and safe and eating foods that make me feel really cozy and safe. And I purposely scheduled Christmas decorating because I was like, that always makes me feel really happy and cozy and warm. So trying to find things that kind of inherently make me feel a little bit safer and a little bit more protected while also taking like steps out of my comfort zone in this like exposure therapy with contamination OCD and then with the kind of opposite action with perfectionism, because those two things are happening simultaneously, which is a lot of stretching. It's a lot of stretching myself in a lot of directions. And so I've let everyone really in my life know I'm a little bit stretched thin right now because I'm making a lot of steps to grow and that's a lot. And so my partner knows, and like my partner knows that I need extra support, and my parents know, and like my therapist is in on it. So like I've got all these people kind of in on it so that I'm not just like doing this thing, because it really can feel like a full-fledged battle sometimes if you're taking these steps. It can feel super overwhelming and really drastic and like really taxing. And so if you let some people into that and give people some insight and say, hey, I might need some extra support because I'm taking this step and it might be kind of scary and draining for me, you can then like, and I know that's scary because then it feels like you're getting help. But even if it's just giving people awareness, maybe not even asking for help, but just informing them what your plan is, because if you have people in your life who are intentional and thoughtful, they'll probably take that as this person might need a little bit of extra encouragement, or this person might need a little bit of extra love. Even if you don't have to ask for it, just informing people what's going on might kind of
give the people in your life enough insight to support you, whether you ask for it or not?
I think communicating the things we're working on is absolutely necessary, whatever that might be, whether we're working on, you know, again, ADHD or eating disorder and perfectionism. I absolutely agree with you that you have to communicate with those around you. For the obvious reason, just you explained, people can better support you. Maybe people can be a little bit more understanding if you're short-tempered or if you right. are, let's say, late. The other thing that I think people really also need to be aware is because sometimes they may have been enabling your perfectionism or benefiting from your perfectionism. So even in a relationship, again, this is not to say one is a victim and the other person is just, you know, mean and taking advantage of the one with perfectionism. But if, let's say, one partner is working on their perfectionism, and that means that they don't handle as much of the household errands like they used to. So what you want to do is you want to communicate that to your partner. You want to call your friend and say, you know, I've been working on myself. One of the things I'm working on is my need for perfectionism. And what I'm going to do is I'm actually going to start declining invitations. I am actually mm-hmm. not going to show up. Most like I need to be more mindful of how many invitations I accept, or even how available I am to give you the help you're used to receiving from me. So it's part of those healthy boundaries to always communicate with people what you are going to be doing differently, so that honestly, A, they're not surprised, and more importantly, they can support you. Because otherwise, the truth is not everybody is going to ready to go along with your plan, because some mm-hmm. people have benefited from your perfectionism. So I think communicating with other people is important so they can support you, but they can also respect your new way of doing things. And again, they are not maybe pushing back on your on the way you're, for example, quote unquote, unavailable now.
Yeah, no, that's a fantastic point. I've noticed I'm in my early 20s, and so I know a lot of people in my life are kind of going through similar phases of life where they've now left college and they're independent and they're starting to kind of reflect on their lives and look at their trauma and look at how that impacts them and start to kind of like do this self-work. And what's come with that a lot of the times is like everyone in my life has recently like learned or been working on how to set boundaries. Like that's like a big, like it, like early 20s kind of thing is like learning how to set boundaries. And, that's one thing that like, I remember when I first had a few people simultaneously start setting boundaries in their life, it like was very odd because it was like, wait a second, like I used to be able to call you no matter what and talk to you about this. And now you're declining. And it like really threw me for a loop because all of a sudden the way, if you've known people for years and years and years, and that's, you associate their behavior patterns like with who they are as a person. And so it kind of can feel like, whoa, I don't, this is not the person that I know. And that can feel really kind of like jolting and odd. And it's interesting to have someone that you know really shift the way that they function in a relationship for the sake of their own like healing and self-growth. And it can be something where you as an individual have to be really careful and mindful of how you respond, and sometimes have to kind of check yourself a little bit and be like, okay, like, yeah, maybe I did benefit from the fact that this person had no boundaries and was a very, very much so a people pleaser. And so all they wanted to do was help, and they were always an ear to, you know, listen and a shoulder to cry on. And maybe now they're saying, hey, I'm burnt out and I actually can't be a shoulder to cry on anymore. Maybe I did benefit from that. And maybe this is not a version of this person that I'm used to. And sometimes that then you have to go do your own work where it's like, okay, was I a little codependent on this person? Was I too reliant on this person? And then sometimes have to tap into your own independence because they no longer want to be codependent. And so there's a lot of things that like it can throw you through a loop. And there are times too where people will then leave and people will choose that they don't want to be in your life anymore because you're not serving them the way that you used to. And that's an icky part of just like healing and setting boundaries and growing up. And just like, I know every single woman in their 20s that I know in their early 20s has like lost at least one friend in the last like 3 years, simply just from how you change a lot in your early 20s and mid 20s. And so there's been a lot of just shifting and kind of finding where you fit in the world. And that might come with some growing pains, and it might be kind of icky and it might feel kind of weird, but I kind of view it as like, at the end of the day, I'd much rather be a better version of myself and feel more proud of who I am and less burnt out, because perfectionism also burns you out so fast and it's so exhausting. It's not like it's an easy, fun thing to do or be a part of. And I'd rather be like a better version of myself that's more calm and rested and more secure in who I am without that being attached to my performance than have a whole bunch of people in my life who benefit off of me and drain me. Like, I'd much rather be the other version, even if I lose some people along the way. But it can be really difficult, and it can, there is like sometimes a significant like grief process that comes with learning to be an adult and setting boundaries.
Absolutely. I mean, speaking of grief, I encourage people to even grieve the loss of their perfectionism, because as we talked already in so many ways, it's not like I don't know that there are benefits of perfectionism. You know, like when I do things perfectly, I get praise. When I do things perfectly, I feel like people like me more. And so I always encourage people to also talk about what was so good about perfectionism. So I'm not, again, in denial of that. I want people to come to terms with, yeah, there were all these things that were good about my perfectionism that I might miss sometimes. I might look for it. I might get triggered, because again, we want to do this intentionally. It's not like this, oh, let's just hate on perfectionism so you are, you know, you never think about it again. I think that won't be very long lasting. I'd rather have people acknowledge, like, what did you enjoy about perfectionism that may be triggering in the future? Mm-hmm. What might you miss about it? And obviously, what was the cost of perfectionism that will always hold you back or bring you back to not falling for it again? Again, because it's going to latch onto things you value. It's going to show up every life transition, big or small, you're going to go through. So you have to be prepared that it's going to feel very shiny at times. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, but this time I'm sure I can handle it much better than last time. This time I will make sure my perfectionism doesn't, you know, get out of hand or be toxic. So it's very, I think, important to be honest with ourselves. What did I like about perfectionism? Because I might sometimes be triggered by those things that I liked about it. And that way we can make, again, have healthier boundaries and barriers with perfectionism as well.
Yeah, no, I can definitely, and this is so funny because it had actually never crossed my mind ever until just now, that you can actually live a life without perfectionism and like heal from it, until you just said like that sometimes like you're helping people actually grieve like the loss of it. Because in my mind, it was kind of like, oh no, this is just kind of how I'll always be. So that's encouraging. That's encouraging too, to kind of, you know that that's a possibility. But I want to end on the self-kindness aspect, because you talk about self-kindness in relation to perfectionism on your page. And I know the self-love term has been tossed around a lot over the last, you know, like 5 years. And I always had such a hard time with that, because I think when you're approaching perfectionism and you're approaching deciding to intentionally pursue imperfection, like imperfections and not being quite so perfect, saying that I love that is just not accurate. Like when I say, like, even with my body, like I love body neutrality compared to body positivity, because it's like, well, I don't always feel super positive about my body, but I feel better about just saying, well, my arms give really good hugs, and like finding the functions of my body that I like. Or I've also felt more inclined to say, like, I self-like and not self-love, because I'm like, I don't quite think I'm there yet. And so I really like the self-kindness aspect, because to me, that's not, you're not promising anything. You're not saying, oh yeah, I love this about myself. You're just taking an intentional step to try to be kind. And I can be kind whether I like it or love it or not. Like, I can choose to be kind. That feels like a choice. And so if someone is listening to this and has related to a lot of what we've talked about perfectionism and is kind of seeking almost like a first step to start to combat this a little bit, what would you suggest? Like, how can someone start to be kinder to themselves? And do you have any like strategies or, you know, tips and tricks that might help?
I think there's so many ways that we can practice self-kindness. And one of my favorite part of self-kindness is being non-judgmental. So meeting ourselves where we are in all shape and form. Because something I was saying earlier about perfectionism is expecting ourselves to be same person every single day. And that often means I have to be energetic, focused, happy, cheerful, and excited. So we expect ourselves to be always having this best mood, best attention. And the reality is we're not. Reality is, and sometimes it's important to know why. It could be hormonal. It could be maybe we're going through something in our lives. Maybe we didn't get enough sleep. Of course, we should know the why, because we can obviously course correct. But at the same time, I don't want to get bugged into like figuring out why am I not feeling great today. Instead, self-kindness is noticing that I'm not feeling well today and telling myself that's okay. Self-kindness is, again, meeting yourself where you are in that any given moment. That in this moment, I want to be quiet. In this moment, I want to be loud. In this moment, I want to sleep. In this moment, I want to run. In this moment, I am hungry. In this moment, I am full. And this idea that self-kindness is, I guess, another word that is accepting and again, seeing ourselves, accepting ourselves, meeting ourselves exactly where we are in any given moment, which also means we're not comparing that to anything else. Because perfectionism is all about comparing, not to go back to again what perfectionism is, but we always comparing ourselves to either the way we were or the way we should be. And we're never again accepting of the way we are in that moment as we are. So that's what I would really encourage people to do is notice, identify, and welcome the way you feel, the way you are acting, the way you are thinking in that moment, and remind yourself that's okay.
Yeah, I love that. I think that even if you're not struggling with perfectionism, everybody can use a little bit of that. But I do think that it does remind me a little bit of the body neutrality, where it's just kind of meeting your body where you're at, meeting your mind where it's at, and just acknowledging how it feels, like thanking it for what it's done. That's one thing that I've learned in the last like 4 years is like, if I feel really insecure about my arms, well, my arms give really good hugs. Like, thank you, arms, for giving really good hugs. Or if I feel really upset about the way my brain is functioning and I feel like my mental illness is like, you know, being really mean to me, I can, well, thank you, brain, for like the times where you're really thoughtful and trying to find little things that I can, you know, latch on to if I'm not loving something about myself at the moment. But thank you so much for coming on. I really, really, really appreciate it.
You are very welcome. I loved our talk. Thank you so much for having me here.
Yeah, of course. Well, I want to make sure that people have a chance to find you and follow your work. So do you want to give people a little bit of background on where you live on social media and all that good stuff?
I would love to. So the easiest way to connect with me will be either Instagram, because I'm most active there. So it's Dr. Menije, DR.MENIJE. And the website for perfectionism is called perfectionismuniversity.com. And I have a free resource there that I am so excited about. It's just through email, so no commitment, where I will share with people 6 steps to overcoming perfectionism. So you get emails about 6 ways to overcome it. And again, it's just an email free course. If people are interested, they can check it out on the website.
Oh, I love that. That's great. And like I said, there's not a lot of things that center on that right now in the social media space. So that's lovely that that's a resource that's available. Well, I will, I'll put all of that in the description so people can find it. But thank you so much again for coming on. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much. I loved it. Thank you.
That's all the time that we have for today. Thank you guys so much for listening. And if you enjoyed the podcast, please rate us 5 stars on iTunes and Spotify and leave us a review. You can also follow the podcast on Instagram at MindfulMindsPod and visit us online at MindfulMindsPod.com. That website is now the host of everything for the podcast. And we also have press, our podcast services, frequently asked questions, and how to sponsor the podcast. We also changed our email. So if you're trying to get a hold of us, you can now email us at MindfulMindsPod@gmail.com. And as always, to end our time, unclench your jaw, take a deep breath, and remember, you can always learn, you can always grow, and you can always choose to live your life in a more mindful way. I will chat with you guys in 2 weeks.